You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, 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 here we are again. We've got a very, very packed few months. So get your little pens out or computers out or typewriters out or get your mind working. We will be doing tonight at Naruda. We're having our normal dinner. That's the second Wednesday of the month. That's Naruda tonight. And that's at the corner of Albion Street and Breeze Street in Brunswick. 6:30 p.m. start. You're all welcome. You just pay for your food and drinks. It's a good way to build community of like-minded people. So if you're listening to The Anarchist World this week, you're more than welcome to join us at Naruda's tonight at the corner of Breeze, B-R-E-E-Z-E, and Albion Street in Brunswick. So we will see you there tonight. Now, next week, on that tonight's the 10th, obviously, of September. Next week on the 17th of September, we will be holding discussion meeting at the Footscray Pub. Well, it's a presentation at the Footscray Pub at 48 Hopkins Street in Footscray. That's 48 Hopkins Street in Footscray. And the topic will be the reforms which were legislated by the Whitlam Labor government, led Labor government between 1972 and 1975. The 50th anniversary of the dismissal will be on Tuesday, the 11th of November, and we will be organising a picnic on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House starting at midday to celebrate those reforms. So put that in your diary. Now, on Thursday, the 9th of October, is Peter Norman Day, and you're welcome to join us at midday at Peter Norman Day. I'll speak more about that. It's a bit closer to the day, midday at Peter Norman, down at the athletics tracks down there in the city where the statue has been created. So that's Peter Norman Day. And then on, Sunday, the 9th of November, will be Francesco Fanti Memorial Day at Murchison. So we'll speak more about that. And don't forget the Eureka celebrations on Wednesday. We'll have to broadcast from there, maybe. No, we won't. Wednesday, we'll pre-record. Wednesday, the 3rd of December. And then on the 20th of January next year is Tanaminawa Marlborough HEMA Commemoration Day. So there's a lot of things that we're involved in that. And obviously there'll be the West Papuan Rent Collective up picnic and gathering in late December. So there's a lot of things, and obviously there's lots of other things you can get involved in. But tonight, drop into the Naruda at the corner of Breeze Street and Albion Street in Brunswick at 6:30 p.m. and join like-minded people for just a meal and a conversation, a bit of laughter and a bit of crying. We'll see you tonight at Naruda's down in Brunswick. Welcome to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano, and I'm hosting today's program. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchos without rulers. That's right, without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Motherhood statements, as they say. Things that people have been struggling for since time immemorial. Now, obviously, in any society, there will be people put more energy, have got more effort, have got different talents. But the difference between a leader and a ruler is that a ruler has institutional structures which maintain their authority. A leader can be removed at any time. They may be charismatic, but the fact is they are dependent on the support of the people around them. And if there's no defined hierarchy, it's much easier to control. Let's move on. Now, today has been this week has been a particularly distressing week for a lot of people, especially the South Sudanese community in Melbourne. And I'm going to try, and the key word is to try, to actually explain what's happening in our society, not just in Melbourne, but across the country, and why it's occurred, and maybe offer a few solutions. Because I think the horrific murders of a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, you know, in the early evening, after returning home from a basketball practice, is, I think, something which touches everybody's heart. And people keep asking questions, why? Now, we've entered a particularly difficult time in society, not just Australian society, but societies around the world, where every single interaction is dominated by the desire to make a profit. I mean, we are beholden to a private investment for private profit society. So what has that got to do with the gangland slaying of two young boys? Well, it's interesting. Australia, to a significant degree, is a migrant society. We've seen wave after wave after wave of migration after the colonisation process began in 1788. And as each new group arrives, we see issues develop. But what's the difference between the 1960s, the 1970s, and 2025? And I'd just like to share some of my own personal experiences to try to build an understanding of what's happening in our society today. Now, when you're the child of migrants who work in soul-destroying jobs in order to make ends meet, especially migrants who come here with minimal skills, just their labour, you get a hunger. You get a hunger to escape. And that hunger to escape revolved around education. So when I first started university in 1970, I started university with a Commonwealth scholarship between 70 and 71, and then there was three universities in 72. Also, there were many more public spaces available for young people, not just sporting clubs. So what we've seen over the last 50 years is the destruction of that social elevator in a public wasteland. And what do I mean by public wasteland? By the creation of society, especially in the newer suburbs that are mushrooming around urban centres, physical environments where there is nothing. I'm not talking about shopping centres, but I'm talking about hubs, not virtual hubs, but real hubs on the ground where young people can congregate, talk, interact, not just on the sporting field. Obviously, we have a very sophisticated sporting culture, which is based on trying to pick the next big thing by weeding out everybody else. So for every next big thing, there may be 10,000 kids that fall by the wayside. So if you destroy that social elevator, which allows children or gives children the ability to escape the situation, the poverty, the situation they find themselves in, if you remove all hope, if you create an environment where hope does not exist because there is no mechanism by which people can escape the situation they find themselves in, whether it's through education, whether it's through sport, whether it's through social contact, what we see is the development of a juvenile underclass, a juvenile group that society has no role, no future role for. And that's what we are seeing. So the murders of these two boys, I think, highlights the fact that this is a increasing, pressing issue, especially in what's left of the public education sector. Because over the last 50 years, during the privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation, deregulation phase that we have been through, we have seen more and more taxpayers' funds being diverted to the private sector, to the detriment of the public sector, whether it's public education, public infrastructure, public schools. So this cancer, and it is a cancer, doesn't just affect recently arrived, marginalised, migrant communities, where we see young people coalesce into gangs, which gives them a sense of purpose, irrespective of what we think of that purpose. But what we are seeing is increasing dissatisfaction among a juvenile underclass that manifests itself not just in violence or gang violence or criminal activity, but manifests itself in the increasing levels of anxiety and depression and antisocial behaviour we see even in very young children. At the same time, we are seeing an increase in dropout rate in public schools. So what we are seeing is a universal issue regarding upcoming generations who feel and are, not just feel, but are marginalised and disenfranchised, who have no way of satisfying that hunger to improve themselves. Now, obviously, in these situations, people gravitate to what is closest to them, and social media and all the different ideas that permeate in social media begin to have an increasing impact on an increasingly disillusioned and marginalised juvenile population. This is not just about harsher sentences, more jails, more psychologists, more psychiatrists, more social workers, more youth workers. This is a situation where we are cannibalising the youngest generations in order to maximise profits for a shrinking number of people in this country. Everything is interconnected. We talk about the environment being interconnected, and if you remove a particular species, there are consequences, unexpected consequences for the environment as a whole. It's the same with humanity, human beings. We're naturally communal animals. And if you don't provide that infrastructure as a society to ensure that children have hope and are not marginalised, especially those sections of society whose parents don't actually have the resources to assist them in times of crisis, we will see an increasing cannibalisation of our young. And that's what we're seeing. As a society, we have failed. And the solutions which are proffered every day are solutions which will lead to more failure, more depression, more anxiety, more suicide, more bullying. So the first simple, practical way of addressing this issue today, not tomorrow, not after some royal commission which leads to nothing, but today, is to set up hubs, community hubs, around these suburbs which are basically public wastelands, where the best you can do if you want to have a piss in the middle of the day is walk into a poker venue. The fact is there is nothing for young people once they approach puberty. There is nothing, there is nowhere they can gather except parks, and when they gather in parks, people call the police. There is nowhere they can gather in a shopping centre. There is nowhere they can gather to interact on a face-to-face basis. So I think one of the best and immediate ways we can actually, well, the government of the day can address this issue, is to rent spaces around these suburbs, whether it's in shopping centres, whether it's shop fronts, whether it's homes, in order to provide places which are staffed by youth workers where children who find themselves isolated and marginalised can actually interact, meet, think, hope. Because the situation is horrific, not just in terms of the murders and the continuing murders, not just in terms of the increasing violent criminal activity, not just in terms of the increasing anxiety and depression and bullying we're confronted with every day as a society, but in terms of our failure to look after the needs of the very youngest, with the privatisation of maternal and child welfare centres, the privatisation of public space, the privatisation of services which, you know, provide necessary services. It is, we have created a public wasteland. And when there is a public wasteland and people who are not in a position to earn an income because of their wages, because of their age, and young people who find themselves marginalised and ostracised, they'll obviously tend to continue to congregate in their own way, create gangs which have no obvious direction except in terms of striking back at the society which has somehow left them behind. So this is a failure of, this is our failure. How ridiculous that we place a fee on students to access higher education. How ridiculous that we've destroyed that social elevated which was able to satisfy the hunger of so many of us so many decades ago to succeed. This is a tragedy which has come home to roost because our fixation with reducing everything to its monetary value. It is a tragedy which needs to be addressed today because the long-term consequences of developing a permanent juvenile underclass are horrendous, and no amount of policing, no amount of jails, no amount of laws will be able to address the situation. This is not a policing problem. This is a community problem. It is a problem we have created because we have decided that making a profit, irrespective of the damage which is caused to society and community, and especially to those sections of the community that don't have access to those resources, is a fundamental aspect of the way we live. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano. Let's move on. As I said before, every problem can be addressed if we are willing to address the issues. And it's just not a matter of resources. It's a matter of will. For us to have these issues in one of the richest continents, the richest continent on the planet, with a minuscule population, highlights how far down that wrong track we have gone. Let's move on. Everybody says democracy is in decline. Well, democracy is a little bit like ice cream. What flavour, right? There's a whole variety of democratic institutions. Now, I don't talk about democracy. I talk about parliamentary democracy. You know, when a chronic confabulating buffoon and a war criminal are the best Western parliamentary democracy can come up with, what do you expect the rest of the world to do? There is a crisis of parliamentary democracy. Whether it's in Nepal, where the Nepalese people have had enough of corruption and poverty in a so-called parliamentary democracy, a country which went through a civil war in the early 2000s and got rid of the monarchy and introduced a parliamentary democratic framework, and today we see people burning sections of the Parliament House, burning the Prime Minister's residence, destroying all through Kathmandu. And then we see the war criminal Netanyahu and his cronies, who are democratically elected into a parliament, being responsible for some of the most heinous crimes of the 21st century, who continue those crimes. Then we see a buffoon in Washington not understanding or not wanting to understand what's going on around the US of A, the darling of the middle classes, flailing about like some reanimated Mussolini, some monarch. You think to yourself, what does parliamentary democracy offer people? But more importantly, we need to think about why has such an idea, for which so many millions of people have died, has turned out to be a total basket case. Look at Papua New Guinea, the endemic corruption in Papua New Guinea as it approaches its 50th anniversary of the creation of the Papua New Guinea nation in a few days' time. Look at what's happening in Nepal. Look at what happened in Burma. And the list goes on and on. So what is the fundamental defect of parliamentary democracy? Now, to me, democracy is rule of the people, by the people, for the people, by an engaged public. And I always like to add, by an engaged public. A public that is willing to leave their participation in a so-called parliamentary democracy to the act of passing a ballot every 3 to 4 years gets the government they deserve. So what is the fundamental problem with parliamentary democracy? As I said at the beginning, the anarchist struggle is about power and wealth. It's about devolving power, holding wealth in common. Well, the problem with parliamentary democracy, especially Western parliamentary democracy, is that it has been usurped. It is no longer represents the voice of the people. What it represents is the voice of that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Look at the difference between the Whitlam-led Labor government, which between 1972 and 1975 passed more reforms in 3.5 years than the whole of the Australian Parliament has passed in the last 125 years. And you look at the timidity, that's right, the timidity of the Australian Labor Party, which now governs with an extraordinary majority, as it flails about trying not to upset the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, which set the parliamentary agenda.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
I shouldn't be talking today about a juvenile underclass. I shouldn't be talking about the destruction of the social elevator which allowed children to satisfy their hunger through access to education, whether it's tertiary or trade. I shouldn't be talking about the fact that in 2025 we have an increasing number of children who suffer from anxiety and depression. I shouldn't be talking about that. This is the richest country, sovereign nation state on the planet. We have 27 million people living on a continent, a mineral-rich continent, and we cannot even provide hubs for kids to congregate in with, you know, if the necessary workers, because there's no money. We can't provide healthcare for an increasing population who don't have access to money, because there's no money to do so. While we see corporations post ever-increasing profits which are consumed by their major shareholders. So what is parliamentary democracy, which has been usurped by a ruling class, have to offer people? Nothing. And those riots you've seen in Nepal today could occur in this country in 10 to 15 years if nothing changes. Has governments acquiesce to corporate demands to not pass legislation which impinges on their ability to not pay taxes legally, or impinge on the ability to create ever-increasing profits irrespective of the human, social and environmental costs? That's the reality. I talk about, and anarchists talk about, direct democracy. Many people talk about direct democracy. So what's direct democracy? Direct democracy is a mechanism by which people make the decisions and elect or appoint delegates to carry out those decisions. They don't elect, they don't give people a signed blank check, for those of you who can remember what a check is, to make whatever decision they like over the next 3 to 4 years until the next election comes around and you're forced by legislation to cast another ballot. How ridiculous. So parliamentary democracy is dead in the water. It's dead in the water, as we've seen in the United States of America, where middle America has turned to a buffoon, a chronic confabulating buffoon, to lead them out of the morass they find themselves in. And what they're finding is electing a billionaire as president isn't the way forward. So we do have issues, and those issues are directly related to the type of society and governments we have created. I keep saying, parliamentary democracy is not fit for purpose. It is not fit for human consumption. We need to be looking at different mechanisms of making decisions which break down hierarchy, which gives buffoons the ability to use the state apparatus to fulfill their wet dreams. Parliamentary democracy has failed the West. It's failed society. It will continue to fail society while the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication continue to hold all the cards. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. Let's move on. Look at the Liberal Party. Menzies' creation. A broad church which has been relegated to one pew. A broad church. Now, irrespective of what the opposition leader, Susan Lee, will be doing over the next few years, the fact is that any reformist elements in the Liberal Party have been like a Stalin coup, have been liquidated from the Liberal Party. And the ragtag army which was elected represents a very narrow spectrum of opinion. So no wonder the Liberal Party is tearing itself apart. See, the Liberal Party is nothing more than a suppository for the IPA. They like to call themselves the Institute of Public Affairs, they're actually the Institute of Private Affairs, and Sky News Central. That's what it represents. That's why we see no way forward. We see a Liberal Party which is ossified, a Liberal Party which is in the hands of a minority which represents the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. A 1% that has no idea how to move forward. We have the leader of the opposition in Victoria talking about tearing up a treaty which has been, you know, 4 years in the making. We have segments of the Liberal Party telling us that the climate emergency doesn't exist and we need to push on with coal exports. We have segments of the Liberal Party which are still fighting the culture wars, somehow thinking that fighting the culture wars, they're going to hold back the tides. It's an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in today. It's even more extraordinary by the fact when there is an opportunity for the Albanese-led Labor Party to introduce and pass significant changes to the taxation system, significant reforms in terms of mining royalties, that nothing is happening because they're so frightened of the Lachlans of the world, so frightened of their own shadows, they're not actually willing to use the extraordinary majority they have in order to go ahead with a reform agenda. The Whitlam-led Labor government was involved in passing so many reforms, it's difficult to catalogue them. Things like no-fault divorce, which changed the lives of millions of Australians. The introduction of Medibank, a universal healthcare system, which was opposed by every significant medical organisation in 1972-73. We have the... I'm talking to you from a community radio station. Community radio stations were set up, financed, licensed, in order to provide an alternative or a different view to the Murdoch-drenched yellow journalism, which was such a feature of the 60s and 70s. Legal aid centres, pensions for single mothers, and the list goes on. And if you're interested in finding out more about this, I'll be doing a presentation at the Footscray Hotel in Melbourne next Wednesday, starting at 7 p.m. But timidity gets you nowhere in life. It's important to introduce legislation which assists people so if future Conservative governments get into power, they are in no position to reject that legislation. Let's move on. I could talk for the next 60 days about the failures of parliamentary democracy, but I'm not going to bore you with it. I mean, around the world, we saw it in Sri Lanka. We're seeing it in Nepal. We saw it in Bangladesh. This is in the last 2 years. We've seen a buffoon elected by Middle America in the United States of America, a war criminal elected in Israel, a pariah state, an emerging pariah state, and the list goes on. Let's move on. Piracy. The state terrorism and the state piracy. I was very interested to see that the United States government decided to be judge, jury and executioner, which is not unusual in these situations, when they bombed a Venezuelan ship in open waters, which they believed was carrying narcotics to the US of A. So here we have the US military being used to bomb the ship. Not arrested in, you know, open waters, but bombed. End of story. It's good, isn't it? That's the great thing about bombing, isn't it? You can kind of resolve your issues for about 2 hours and then they get bigger and bigger. So are we going to see more of this? United States piracy on the open oceans, where it decides who the enemy is and then decides to liquidate them. Maybe they're taking a page out of the Israeli book. Let's move on. Gaza, the carnage continues. Irrespective of what's happened in Doha, in Qatar, America's strongest ally in the Middle East, where it has the biggest military base in the Middle East, where it's its other ally, the Israeli government, bombing Doha in its quest to liquidate Hamas. See, Hamas is more than a group of people. It's more than a political win, and it's more than a military wing. Obviously, the Israeli state, with its the amount of force it is able to deploy in an area half the size of Melbourne or Sydney in a two-year period, is quite capable of liquidating 99% of its fighters, as well as taking out tens of thousands, including children and Palestinians, who were never involved with Hamas. But the fact is, Hamas is a movement. It is a movement. It's like a religion. It's a movement. You can remove its leadership. You can remove the priests or the militants. But ultimately, it's a movement. It's a movement based on the concept of that the Palestinians deserve a homeland. It's a very simple concept. Now, let's not forget, I know people bring up the Holocaust, and the Holocaust was horrendous. But you see, it wasn't the Palestinians who were responsible for the Holocaust. If I remember correctly, it was us, the Europeans, the Germans, the Austrians, and all those conquered states which agreed to hand over their Jewish population to the Nazi liquidation machine. But almost, 80 years later? Or 90 years later? 85 years later? We're expecting the people of Palestine to bear the cost for the European-engineered Holocaust. And we sit on our hands and we twiddle our thumbs, nation states around the world, as the flotilla draws closer to Gaza. We will see ships bombed, people arrested, jailed. But do we see any French ships or British ships or German ships or even USA ships come to the aid of the Gazans by providing much-needed food and medical aid? I mean, if the Israeli government thinks it could get away with bombing a French ship or a German ship or a British ship, bringing aid, they'd find themselves in a much more difficult situation than they are today. So all power to those people on that flotilla which are trying to reach Gaza to provide so much needed aid. But the atrocities continue, and they continue every day. And every day the world sits on its hands saying, oh, this is an internal Israeli issue. It's not an internal Israeli issue. It's not like Burma where the Burmese military is murdering its own people. It's a situation where we have occupied territories, people who have been occupied by a colonial power, who are now being subjected to the most horrific revenge. And that's all it can be described as, revenge. Well, you know, we thought there was some Hamas fighters in that building, 15-storey building in Gaza, so we just bombed the building. End of story. I didn't like that reporter, so we killed that reporter. Maybe what they were talking about, you know, it wasn't fair, was it? The list goes on and on. So all power to those people who continue to raise the issue of the Palestinians and the fact that what they are fighting for is not just their existence, but the creation of an independent Palestinian state on lands they had lived on for thousands of years. You listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Oh, Lachlan, I'm so pleased for Lachlan Murdoch. And Middle America is so pleased with Lachlan Murdoch. So pleased with Fox News. See, what I like about the Murdochs is they don't give a shit about what they broadcast. Just listen to Sky News and the shit that comes out of Sky News. Look, my apologies to shit, because obviously shit is used as a fertiliser. They just want to make a buck, all right? They're business people. They want to make a buck. And if Middle America wants to lap up the shit which is pumped out by Fox News, and Middle Australia, or an increasing number of Middle Australians, want to lap up the shit that comes out of Sky News, well, good luck to them. But the fact is, the Murdochs are there to make a buck. And they wouldn't care. They don't care what's produced, as long as it attracts eyeballs and advertisers. And that's how the corporate-owned media works. It's about advertising, whether it's virtual or whether it's real. It's about advertising. It's about our eyeballs on advertising. Look at what's happening in the virtual world, where the sexual exploitation of children attracts eyeballs and attracts advertising, where hatred attracts eyeballs, attracts advertising. It's ultimately about making a buck, irrespective of the human, social or environmental consequences. So good luck to Lachlan Murdoch for taking over, you know, Rupert's, the fruits of Rupert's loins, I should say, for taking over Fox News and the rest of the Murdoch media empire. The fact is, I can imagine it doesn't really matter what the content is, as long as eyeballs are fixed on the content, as long as advertisers are willing to pay big to have their products beamed into our life, then they're happy to produce that shit. Now, treaty. I've got two comments to make about the current treaty in Victoria. I'm interested in two things, and I think things people should understand. This is a treaty between First Peoples in Victoria and the Victorian government. It's not a treaty between First Nations in Victoria and the Victorian government. There are over 45 First Nation groups which inhabited the area which is now called Victoria. And there are descendants from all those nation groups. There's only 12 ratified Aboriginal parties which are recognised by the state government. If you're not recognised by the state government, you are not eligible to receive financial support. And more importantly, councils are not financed to deal with Aboriginal nations, which are not recognised Aboriginal parties. Secondly, I noticed the leader of the opposition, the man who likes to kind of, you know, turn up at every murder scene. Well, not everyone, but, you know, he likes to talk about law and order, being an ex-police officer. I've noticed that he didn't make a comment, but he was suggesting maybe if they got elected, they would rip up the treaty. Now, this raises a very interesting proposition, which most people don't seem to understand. Victorian constitution is determined by the parliament. So if a treaty is entered into by this government and Victoria's First Peoples, the next government has the constitutional power to tear up that treaty. That is the difference, and this is the essential difference between the voice referendum and this treaty. The voice referendum was based on a constitutional question, and that constitutional question was put to the people in a referendum. If that referendum had been successful, and this is the reason behind the referendum, it would have been incorporated in the Australian Constitution, and no government could ever tear up what the Australian people had agreed to, because it had been incorporated in the Australian Constitution. But as far as a treaty, that is not enmeshed in a constitutional arrangement, which can only be removed by a referendum, that type of treaty can be torn up at any future date by a future government which doesn't agree with the process. And that's what we're looking at, because the Constitution of Victoria is not a matter for the Victorian people. It's ultimately a matter for the Victorian government. And last but not least, the ANZ, USI and Artificial Intelligence. ANZ, the ANZ Bank. USI, Universal Basic Income. AI, Artificial Intelligence. So what's happening? Well, you see, the ANZ Bank is one of the big four. They've got a licence, a financial licence, which is given to them by the government. And that financial licence allows them to trade. Now, they have over 40,000 employees, and the new CEO has decided that, for whatever reason, they're going to get rid of 8% of their workforce within the next few months. 8%. That's about 3,500 people. Now, some people say it's because of the use of artificial intelligence. Now, I've spoken about this many times in the past because it's interesting, because I've said over and over again, the responsibility of a corporate entity is to create profits for its major shareholders. That is its only legal responsibility. It has no moral responsibilities, no ethical responsibilities, no responsibilities to the state, no responsibilities to the people of Australia. Its ultimate responsibility is to its shareholders. Now, if they believe by introducing artificial intelligence, they will increase returns to their shareholders and cut costs, they will do that. And that's why, as we enter the age of artificial intelligence, we will see not 3,500 jobs, but tens of thousands of white-collar jobs being wiped off the face of the earth. Wiped off the face of the earth. And in a situation where you no longer need people to create profits, you need to do something in order to appease people's anger. And that means the introduction of a universal basic income, where a person's ability to survive is not linked to a wage system, but it's linked to the fact that they are a resident of that particular society. So we are entering a new era in human relations as far as the 21st century is concerned. We're entering an era where not everybody is needed in the workforce because of technological innovations, including artificial intelligence, in order to survive. And if you don't need everybody, then what happens to those people who are disenfranchised? And how do you ensure that you don't see the what you see in Nepal today, where people revolt? And that means the introduction of a universal basic income. Look, we've looked at a number of subjects today, but I think the most important is the fact of we're creating a juvenile underclass. I'd like you to think about that. Obviously, there are different people with different ideas, but ultimately, it's all joined together. It's all about linking the dots. In a society where wealth, the accumulation of wealth and power, is the central and most important element, we will create an increasing number of social, cultural, community problems. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can join public interest before corporate interest today. Go to the website, PIBCI.net, PIBCI.net. YouTube channels, public interests before corporate interests, public interests before corporate interests. YouTube channel, josephtoscano.nam. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. And if your community radio station is a member of the Community Radio Network and they don't broadcast The Anarchist World this week, I suggest you knock on the CEO or the station manager's door and ask them why not. What's important in the 21st century that we continue to talk about facts. Not opinions, but facts. And we do things to address those facts. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne on the Community Radio Network.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.